standard ballads accompanied by strings, the audience grew. And then, as time and popular culture moved mercilessly forward, bebop came to seem, for jazz's diminished yet passionate audience, foundational, comprehensible, moving, lyrical. And the jazz that followed bebop, known to those who acquired categories by the under-descriptive, even misleading, label of hard bop, seemed still more comprehensible and lyrical. Other categories would follow, but I confess that in the genres of bebop and hard bop, jazz created in the quarter century between roughly 1942 and 1967, I find almost all of jazz that I want and need. I find magnificent art produced by what bebop's other co-creator, Dizzy Gillespie, called in a slightly different context, super royalty. Magnificent men, mostly men and mostly black, of supreme gifts and regal mien, creating masterpiece after masterpiece. Not antique, not anodyne, not forbiddingly difficult, and viscerally thrilling. And with all respect to this book's presiding genius, Miles Davis, who late in his career proclaimed that he had no interest in returning to the lyrical masterpieces he produced and participated in between ages 18 and 35, 1944 to 1961, saying that to him, revisiting that music would be like eating leftover turkey. With all respect to Miles, the thrill of this great and never-fading music is this book's pulse. Prelude. March 2nd, 1959. A late winter Monday in the second-to-last year of the Eisenhower administration. Fair and mild in Manhattan. Among the top stories in the New York Times that morning, a fog-bound collision between the American export liner Constitution and an oil tanker. The commuter crisis, caused by ever-rising automobile use in the metropolitan area. Tensions between white colonials and black natives in East Africa. This last article quotes a British banker alleging the vast unreadiness of the great majority of Africans for self-government. An older, staider world. On the first page of the second section, a story by the young reporter Gay Talese about crazy couple clubs, groups of jaded suburbanites seeking unusual amusements in the city, visits to yoga clubs, night court, Bowery restaurants. And deeper into the section, on what was still called the theaters page, a review, glowing, by the paper's jazz critic, John S. Wilson, of a Thelonious Monk concert at Town Hall. "He has carried apparent uncertainty to a high and refined art," Wilson wrote. "He makes each performance a fresh and provocative experience." Buried in the back pages amid the shipping news and weather, a short item about the death by heroin overdose in the Women's House of Detention, to which she had been remanded after her arrest for drug possession, of one Rosalind Owens, age 30, of 2492 8th Avenue in Harlem. An anonymous, presumably African-American woman, a person of no consequence to the readers of the New York Times, although 4 months later in this jazz momentous year, another African-American woman, born Eleonora Fagan, but known to the world as Billie Holiday, who suffered from the same disease as Rosalind Owens, would die at age 44, handcuffed to her bed in Harlem Hospital. If the crazy couple club of Manhasset, by the evidence of the photograph in the Times piece, a prosperous and cheerfully self-satisfied group, had dared to extend their Bowery slumming beyond ethnic restaurants, they might have wandered into the cozy, smoky, messy confines of the Five-Spot Cafe at 5 Cooper Square, whose owners, two Italian-American brothers and ex-GIs named Joe and Iggy Termini, had for the past 3 years been booking some of the greatest jazz musicians of the day, including Cecil Taylor, Cannonball Adderley, and, most notably, Thelonious Monk, whom the Terminis had helped regain his New York City cabaret card, a conditional ID issued by the police department as a legally and practically questionable method of discouraging narcotics use, 6 years after Monk had lost his card, and with it, the right to play in clubs that served alcohol, in a mistaken 1951 drug bust. Amid the tobacco and reefer fumes and beer reek of that tiny, dark saloon, a glass of gin cost 50 cents, a pitcher of beer, $1, the members of the Crazy Couple Club of Manhasset might have found themselves...